This is Giving the Game Away with Cam Scott and Joel Barber. And our series of podcasts features interviews with a range of elite athletes, including Olympic gold medalists, international footballers, and BBC Sports Personality of the Year winners.
This is a podcast that aims to explore the areas of an athlete's life that aren't often talked about, such as dealing with rejection, recovering from injuries, and handling the media. We also think there are so many lessons to learn from top-level sport, and by exploring the journeys of these athletes, we are hoping to show how those learnings can be applied to our own journeys, whether in sport or in our day-to-day lives.
And coming up on today's episode,
I remember when I left KPMG, I sort of asked my partner at the time, and he was like, "Oh, it's pretty simple, solution, isn't it? It's a simple question. Well, they don't have state funerals for accountants, but they obviously did bloody." So I was a junior coach at the club I mentioned earlier, Sunshine Rugby Club. I was the junior coach there and the treasurer and the secretary for that club for even the first year of my professional career. So all that stuff definitely is important. One of the benefits I think of having worked and having gotten my degree and sort of established the early steps in that part of my life is I can really play cricket with a sense of freedom that I otherwise may not be able to play with.
All journeys in sport are different, but today's guest has perhaps one of the more unusual and interesting paths to the top. At just 24 years old, young Australian cricketer Peter Hatzoglou already has a cricketing CV to envy. He's a Big Bash winner, and he's had stints in the UK playing for Oval Invincibles and Glamorgan, where he is currently. However, his journey to the top is more unusual than most, and actually, not that long ago, a career in cricket was not really a reality for him. In fact, Peter took a break from the game in 2016 to focus on his exams, and he had been trying to instead carve out a career in finance. Post-exams, he did return to cricket, but just to play for his local village team, Sunshine Heights. And as recently as 2019, he was playing in the Cheshire 4th Division. He was even working for KPMG as late as April last year, and to be honest, a professional cricketing career just wasn't really on his radar. That all changed rapidly though, and just a year after playing in the Cheshire 4th Division, Peter was making his BBL debut for Melbourne Renegades. A year after that, and he won the competition with the Perth Scorchers. It's really a remarkable rise from village cricket to BBL champion in the space of about 5 years. It was really great to speak to Peter and hear about this incredible story and all the lessons he's learned along the way, such as the importance of persistence and resilience and adaptability to change. He also speaks about the wisdom he received from the late, great Shane Warne, who was actually instrumental in convincing Peter to come over to the UK and play some club cricket, which ultimately was the catalyst for Peter getting a 100 contract to the Oval Invincibles. It's an amazing story, and there's so much to learn from Peter's journey. I hope you get as much out of it as we did. We'll let Peter tell the story. So without further ado, here is Peter Hatzoglou.
Well, Peter, thanks for coming on. I appreciate you giving up your time to speak to us. Just to give a little bit of, just to set the scene a bit for everyone listening, I heard a soundbite that you said on an interview once that the only reality for you was that cricket wasn't a reality. So would you mind just sort of setting the scene a bit on how, even though you're a Big Bash winner now and a pro cricketer, for a long, long time, it didn't actually seem like that was going to be the case?
Yeah, so to rewind back, 6 years now, I was in year 12, which is like the equivalent of sixth form. So the end of my secondary schooling, I wasn't even playing cricket. I'd taken a break to focus on my studies and get into my university course and all that. I got into my university course and I'd sort of progressed through with that. I was working. I then started working at a firm called Spanish Investment Partners. And I sort of played grade cricket without any real hope of, expectations of playing professional cricket. Just as things happened, COVID hit, a few league spinners went down. I'd sort of made my way up through the grades from the fifth grade to the first grade. And after having played 7 first grade games, 2 leagues ago, the Melbourne Renegades went down, and I luckily got my opportunity. I think with me, I switched from bowling that slow Shane Warne style of leg spin to the faster style of leg spin. And sort of as I did that and got better and better at that faster style, the doors started opening up more and more for me. So sort of put it down to that in a lot of ways.
It's an amazing story, and it's really such a meteoric rise. Just a few years ago, you were playing village cricket and focusing on your exams. You even working at KPMG as late as, what, April last year, before deciding to quit your job and focus on cricket. And now, looking back, you're a BBL champion and a well-known cricketer with a huge future in the game. So I guess, firstly, how do you even begin to compute and process that rise? And secondly, what have you learned from the journey?
Yeah, it's mad. It's something that's very difficult to compute. I think it also, what I really like about how, or one of the benefits I think of having worked and having gotten my degree and sort of established the early steps in that part of my life, is I can really play cricket with a sense of freedom that I otherwise may not be able to play with. I guess in many ways, KPMG and Zenith Investment Partners and my work and I guess like career away from cricket are my insurance policies. So yeah, I take a lot of confidence from that and it sort of lets me play without fear of failure, I suppose.
In terms of those little bits that happened along the journey, I know there was, you kind of touched on it there, that just by chance, kind of in a net, someone said you need to bowl a bit with a bit more energy, and then kind of you lent into that obscurity a little bit, and then from that you became kind of one of the top bowlers in a trend that is taking over T20 cricket at the moment. So would you mind just maybe going into that little switch you had in your playing style and like the impact that it had long term on your career?
Yeah, so it started with my village cricket coach in Melbourne at a club called Sunshine Heights Cricket Club. His name was Luke Simpson, or his name is Luke Simpson. And he told me to bowl with a little bit more energy. So my interpretation of that was to run in a bit faster, bowl a bit quicker, focus less on spinning the ball big, and more on just challenging the batter for speed. Essentially, I was just trying to model myself on a Rashid Khan, who at that stage maybe played 1 or 2 seasons in the Big Bash, and he was really starting to establish himself as a T20 superstar. Yes. And I think obviously when T20 came about 20 odd years ago, it was going to be the depth of spin bowling and all that sort of stuff. We've seen that sort of the reliance on spin bowlers and the amount of spin that's bowled through the middle overs of the game has just gotten more and more. So I think some of the, systematic or some of the trends in T20 cricket have definitely helped me come along. I've sort of just managed to work out my skill to the level I have at the right time as well. So yeah, pretty much the timings of it all too.
Yeah, I think it's quite a cool lesson as well in just like exploring things, trying things, because a lot of players, when they've been doing something a certain way, they kind of get to 17, 18 and they're quite stuck in their ways and they wouldn't necessarily try and explore a new thing in their technique or a new way of playing. And you did that, kind of just gave something a go, and then this career all came from it. So I think there's quite a cool lesson in that as well.
Yeah, I've been reading this book. It's called Hitting Against the Spin. Nathan Lever and Ben Jones wrote it. In one of their chapters, they talk about the Sri Lankan cricket team and how they won the World Cup in 1993 or whatever it was, whatever year it was. And they speak about how the Sri Lankan team at that stage was right, we're not going to compete with England and beat them on orthodoxy, traditional cricket techniques and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And they were like, we're going to beat these teams. We're going to have to do it our own way. We're going to have to embrace difference with guys like Murali, guys like Malinga, Dilsham, Scoochots and all that. They're going to have to beat countries like England, the time were a really strong side, and Australia were a really strong side. They're going to have to beat them playing a different game. So I guess I look at my bowling in that way, where it's like something that's different, and these conventional techniques and these conventional styles of play maybe don't match up so well against it. And I just try and spend my time trying to understand guess, what my goal is.
I think also what it's shown is like you weren't getting into the professional outfits at ages 18 and 19, perhaps when other players were. But because you were so persistent and you really wanted to make a career of it at that point, you were willing to experiment and you waited patiently for your break. And sometimes that's what it takes, is you've got to be persistent. And hopefully there are kids listening to this who might be in a similar position where cricket isn't looking like a likely career. But I would assume that your advice is keep persevering, maybe change things if you need to, but don't give up on that cricketing dream because it is still possible.
Yeah, I think so. The 2020 circuit has shown many times over that there is sort of possibilities that weren't there previously. I think the other thing I'd say to any sort of youngster is, you can definitely still pursue cricket whilst pursuing other things as well. And often, in many ways, you probably wouldn't suspect. Like I said earlier, with work having helped my cricket, like giving me a sense of freedom, a lot of things sort of feed into each other and help each other out and complement each other as well. So I definitely say persist. Nothing's worth, it's always sweeter once you've had to work hard for it. But you can always work hard for other things as well.
Yeah, I think what you say is right about work. Giving you benefits on the cricket pitch. It gives you that release. It perhaps takes the pressure off because you know that you've got a fullback option if cricket doesn't work out for you. Probably teaches you time management skills as well, because you've got to juggle both cricket and a career. And in many ways, it probably kept you humble and grounded as well, because you're playing elite level cricket and then going into the office on a Monday, and it helps you remain grounded and remember your roots, I suppose.
Yeah, they're about to still that sort of stuff. And like, I was a junior coach at that club I mentioned earlier, Sunshine Cricket Club. I was the junior coach there and the treasurer and the secretary for that club for even the first year of my professional career. So all that stuff definitely is important. And it's something I value, I suppose. And it does help keep things in perspective when you're in Abu Dhabi in the T10s and parties and all sorts of stuff like that are happening. So helps you appreciate all that stuff a lot more.
I think also, there's a lot of athletes we speak to who focus on a particular sport throughout their childhood and their upbringing. They're so laser focused on becoming a professional in that sport. Actually, sometimes they experience burnout when they get to maybe 18, 19, because they've been too focused on it. Perhaps because you had eggs in other baskets, you were playing a couple of other sports, you had your academia and your work on the side. It meant that actually, because cricket wasn't everything for you, you were able to continue enjoying it and you didn't have that burnout, so that you're allowed to progress as you got older.
Yeah, I think, you learn skills from, I guess, like that's the Tiger Woods model, where he specialized at the age of 2 years old and continued on. And reality is most people do burn out. I guess the model, I suppose, I've in many ways accidentally followed is like the Roger Federer model. Roger played a number of different sports throughout his childhood and only then specialized in tennis when he was like 16 or 17 or something like that. I guess you can probably, and like to give one tangible example to you now, I work as a risk consultant at KPMG, maybe helps me think more analytically about the game. It helps me solve problems about, my bowling. Like if I look at my bowling numbers, my bowling statistics, and I see that the batter's hitting me, I take a particular side of the ground or whatever more often than what is normal. Maybe it helps me figure that out, I guess. Like the skills I've learned in other parts of my life and help me develop, solving skills that otherwise would have had. A lot of things are transferable. Maybe that's really helped me along. Maybe that helps me overthink a little bit at times as well. But I'm sure that's always that's quite a big part of my development.
And when it actually, going back to your journey a bit, when it actually came to you going into the Renegades dressing room and you were actually still just someone who was working full time and had basically just been focused on playing club cricket alongside working, I'm kind of interested by that, how you had the confidence just to walk into a dressing room with all these guys who had been stars from the age of, you know, their teenage years. They'd been playing Ashes series, they've been playing internationals. Like, how did you have the confidence, do you think, to just kind of go from that office environment to then literally thrown into sort of elite level sport with guys like that?
Yeah, I guess also you're like naturally extroverted, but yeah, when you're bowling to guys in nets, you naturally measure yourself up against them. And if you see that they're struggling and whatever, that gives you confidence. And for me, it's just my bowling style was so unusual. It always takes batters a little bit of time to adjust and sort of figure out what's actually coming at them. So I always take more confidence in that whenever I'm bowling to a new batter or anything like that. It just gives me so much validation in my own skill set. But I guess if my bowling style or whatever was not conventional otherwise, wouldn't really have.
Perhaps one other thing that maybe gave you confidence as well early on in your career is when you were bowling and Shane Warne was commenting on your bowling. Can you explain the impact that might have had on you and how it gives you confidence even to this day?
Yeah, huge. Like there's still a clip on my phone. It's like 5 million clip. Maybe not 5 minutes, so I don't take that long to get through my own. It's like a three minute clip of Warnie commentating me whilst I'm bowling in the deep fashion. Basically, I happened to bowl a bit over at that stage, and it was sort of like Mark Powell was commentating the thing at the time, and Powell was like, Warty, you know, he's like spinner, take it away, you like talk about Pete's over. And he just sort of like spoke through my over and whenever someone like that talks about you, you're naturally gonna like be glued to everything they say. And he was very complimentary and I think at the end of that first big bash season, I reached out to him just to say thank you and that I appreciated the words, anything he sort of says and anyone he sort of backs, I guess it goes a long way. So he spoke a little bit from then on and he gave me a few tips and tricks and whatever, and I'll cherish that. Not everyone gets a chance to do that, and unfortunately I couldn't take my relationship with him any further than that. It's not like I knew him incredibly well, but you know, for someone he owed nothing to, he gave me more time than I expected. So I'm very, very thankful and very grateful for that.
Well, and obviously as a young leg spinner, you'd have grown up watching him play and probably influenced you then, but he's also had a massive influence on Australian cricket, and he sadly passed away last year. Could you just give a word on the influence he had in your career, but on Australian cricket more generally as well?
Yeah. Warnie's obviously left a huge footprint on Australian cricket. He's marginal in life personality. And that contribution is something that's, I guess, impossible to look by. The guy had a state funeral here in Victoria. I remember when I left KPMG, I sort of asked my partner at the time, he was like, oh, it's pretty simple, solution, isn't it? It's a simple question. Well, they don't have state funerals for accountants, but they obviously did bloody. So, it's huge. That's a huge part in Australian cricket and world cricket as well. Second highest we can take in test cricket. We talk about sports private equity. I think he owns like 5% of the register on Royals as well. So, had that business acumen as well. Lovely guy, smart guy, and I clearly did very well.
And he actually was influential in you moving over to the UK last summer and playing a bit of club cricket. And then that eventually led to you playing in the 100. Can you just explain that story and how Shane Warne encouraged you to move to the UK?
Yeah. So from that initial discussion, after my first season in the Big Bash, where I texted him to say, thank you. Thanks for his commentary. The conversation continued rolling on over a long period. And, eventually got to the point where it was like, I'm in spirit, Nate Blake's been on, are you available? And I was like, I'm available. It got to that. And then he said he sort of picked me up in the, as a wild card when the 100 had four overseas one of them being a wild card, so you just sort of get over place and pretty giggling and all that. And yeah, I guess I follow those instructions. Unfortunately, he then passed away. But you know, I guess everything sort of worked out in the end, and I got picked up by the Oval Invincibles towards the back end of the last season's edition of the 100. And I had a fantastic time with those boys, Sam Paranel, seeing sort of what he's gone on to do. And it was great to form friendships with guys like Bilbo and Bill Jackson, all these other blokes who were superstars, even like Jordan Cox, you know, someone who I regularly see on the circuit now.
What I was just going to say as well is that your journey, I think, it highlights how kind of like precarious the nature of cricket is and the cricket career. Like, I think people think that it's all very structured. You're kind of in an academy from a certain age and then you follow a certain pathway, play for a state and then, you know, potentially play for Australia. But yours is kind of all these random bits that have come out of nowhere, really.
Yeah.
How do you kind of like embrace that? Like how sort of...
Honestly, it's a nightmare. Like me, for example, right now, if I want to apply for financing to get a home, the banks, obviously a lot of my income is earned overseas, and the Australian banks look at that and go, oh, no, foreign income. I don't like the look of that. Mm. So, and the nature of all those contracts is so like on and off, like hot and cold. Like for example, the 100 draft just went by. I played in the 100 last year. I'm not playing it this year. I'm playing in some other competitions, which I don't think I can announce it yet. The teams haven't announced it, but like it's so hot and cold. The reality is one injury and you're out all of a sudden. So it's definitely precarious. And that's why I speak about playing with a sense of freedom and having that insurance policy with my career outside of cricket. I'm currently studying for the CFA exam. I'm slowly making my way through those over the next little bit, I suppose. And it's honestly a nightmare. I don't know how guys do it. It could be really stressful.
Yeah, it's also quite funny because you're, I guess, the two kind of worlds that you're living in is on one side you were kind of advising people how to navigate risk and, you know, maybe shy away from risk a little bit, and then on the other you're probably in like the riskiest career that you can actually get, so it's kind of like two quite difficult worlds to be balancing, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's a good point.
And do you think that perhaps the fact that you weren't getting picked up as a kid, you mentioned there not getting selected for the 100 this year despite playing in it last year, do you think that the fact that you faced a bit of rejection in your past maybe means that you have some resilience so that when you, I don't know, face some obstacles in your career going forwards, maybe you're out of the side or you don't get picked up by 100 outfit. Do you think that maybe you have some resilience that means that you can get over those obstacles now?
For sure. You definitely develop like a bit of a shield to it. It's just the nature of every year teams list change and the domestic players available change and all that sort of stuff. So you can definitely understand where teams come from with all those list changes and everything. I guess like I was a beneficiary of that at one stage, you know, when I got my gig at the Renegades. So it's just comes as a territory, I suppose.
It doesn't seem to bother you though. From every time I've watched you play, you always play with like a smile on your face and with energy, and you just seem to be happy to be there. It doesn't seem like you feel the pressure of the external factors of cricket and all the pressure that comes with it. It seems like you're just genuinely happy to be there and having fun playing it.
Yeah, yeah. It goes back to that insurance policy and the sense of freedom that I guess I've developed. Having built a really solid base with my career, lets me play the game for what it is. Game.
Yeah, nice. And are there ever times when, I don't know, you have to go out and play a big match, for example, and you are, I don't know, maybe a little bit shattered, or there's something where you're like, right, I could maybe do with not having to train today? Are there ever moments where you think like, I think be a little bit different?
it's natural. Of course you get that. I get it all the time. But I don't know, like, I guess you develop perspective over time. And not to say that I've developed all the perspective in the world and I've got it down pat or anything, but I guess you just deal with the challenges head on and go back to what you're best at. what particular skill you're best at, what particular, for me, like, it's very simple. If I feel like I need to execute my best ball, all I'm thinking is get my front arm up and follow through, which is something I've been told from the age of like 11. So, yeah. It's a free, you know, those high pressure moments just bring you back to something that's pretty simple.
And probably one of the most high pressure moments that you were involved with was the BBL, and we've touched on it already, of you ending up winning that competition. Can you just explain what it that team was like, and perhaps touching on sort of the mental characteristics of that team? What made them so good?
We've got a lot of experienced players who are at the sort of mature end of their careers. And guys just good at cricket, you know, like just have just developed a method over time. Through a lot of failure as well, like I said. I guess over time you build confidence in your game, and once you build your confidence, then it's just a matter of going out and trying to do it more often than not. So I think those sort of guys who are at the mature end of their careers were complemented with some really good youths coming through, guys like Aaron Hardy, Lance Morris, and even Steve Connolly, who hit 20 off six balls or something to win us the grand final this year. It just came together really well as a unit, and it just helps them guys have confidence and get confidence from having performed. So where the scorches are at the minute.
Yeah, nice. I think one of the main things you can take from like top level cricketers is kind of like golf, in that it is a game that is actually a lot of it is failure, really, and like dealing with failure is a massive part of it. So I wonder what things you're able to pick up from those guys about when they have maybe a run of bad games and things aren't quite going their way, how they're able to just kind of bring it back to baseline and bring it back to performing at the levels that they know they're capable of doing.
Yeah, the golfers, I don't know how they do it. I mean, as far as I can say, they've got something like the most stressful job in the world. It's just like they do this swing at such velocity and whatever, and there's very little wiggle room, I suppose, there's very little margin for error. Those guys must be so headstrong, and I can't really speak for what they, you know, what they do to get themselves in that sort of state. But these cricketers, I suppose, look at people like that and look at women like that, and we definitely put that on them.
I suppose as a leg spinner as well, it's something that you have to deal with. You get hit around a lot, particularly as a kid, but you've got to have that resilience to be aware that I might get hit for 15 runs in this over, but I'm going to get a wicket in the next. And that's something I've seen Shane Warne actually talk about quite a lot himself, is coaches of leg spinners need to have patience with their leg spinners and keep bowling them. Don't take them off if they've been smacked around one over. So I guess it's about having that resilience, and about also captains and coaches having an awareness of the skills of the leg spinner and not crushing their confidence by bringing them off.
Yeah, it's the real, you know, the darker art, it's the beautiful art. A leg spinner, there's probably no better ball in cricket than a leg spinner can bowl. You know, it's often is consistent, but, ball of the century, et cetera, it's going to come from a leg spinner. So I guess there's a lot that can go wrong with leg spin bowling. You know, you're moving your wrists in such a way that it's very awkward. And it's just like a lot going on, I suppose. So it's probably interesting. Like, you look at trend in cricket more broadly, I guess you've probably had Shane Warne and Anil Kumble, who's two of the best test bowlers in history. But, you know, when you look at the next 100 best test bowlers, I don't know if there's another leg spinner in there. Like, I guess it's something that's so difficult to get right. But yeah, gee whiz, when you do get it right, it's sky's the limit. So I guess Murali's the other one, isn't he? Who's They're sort of the top three, Kumble, Warne, Murali, and Murali's an honorary leg spinner anyway, in many ways. I guess the upside's unlimited when you can't get it right.
Awesome. We've spoken a bit about the career today. Just talking about future ambitions, what would you say is the future ambition for you? Kind of the nature of your career means that you've taken on all these things that have kind of just come out of left field a little bit, but at the same time, I understand you probably want to be goal orientated as well and probably have your mind on like a larger goal. So what are the long-term ambitions, really?
Yeah, I try not to set, like, I'm probably not overly goal orientated, to be honest. Like, I don't want to set a limit on what I can achieve, I suppose. I think a lot of or, you know, like Jamal Mills, who I think was a guest from your show in another episode. I think he sort of, I saw him saying that as well. And I see a few different people saying that, and that really resonates with me. I don't want to set a ceiling on what I can achieve, I guess. And yeah, as to what I'm looking to do at the minute, the opportunities are coming up in the franchise T20s, so I think that's probably what I'm best suited to, as far as like skills wise and everything. So I guess I'll just keep chasing those opportunities. I'm pretty keen on chasing those opportunities. And yeah, I mean, I'm in a position where I'm still 24 years old. I'm still very young in terms of a cricketer's career. So I'm not shutting doors on anything, red ball, cricket included. I'm just sort of like chasing any opportunity that comes and pursuing things that way.
And they're sort of cropping up all over an even quicker rate, aren't they? Like, it's not like 5 years ago where there was only a select amount of leagues. Now you've got things like Major League Cricket, for example, which just open up not only another job for you, but also just a whole new cool experience as well with it.
It's you know, it's World Series Cricket 2.0 in many ways. Yeah. So I feel very fortunate to be playing this era. The reality is I probably wouldn't be a professional cricketer if I was playing this era. So I'm one of the lucky ones.
Yeah, it seems like you have real gratitude. You do actually think you're one of the lucky ones, when actually there is an element of luck, but actually obviously there's a lot of graft that's gone behind that as well. When you are playing in these major tournaments, the BBLs, the hundreds, and all the others that you have mentioned, do you feel pressure when you're out on the pitch, or are you able to sort of compartmentalize it and attack it without pressure?
You do definitely feel the pressure. But again, it's just about, for me, going back to, in those high pressure moments, just stripping it back to a really simple process. As I said earlier, just as I'm running into goal, get my front arm up high and follow through. That's sort of like my foolproof way of getting through those high pressure moments. And I guess it's held up decently enough to this point. So I suppose I'll continue going ahead with it.
Control the controllables, I suppose. And then, yeah, looking forward again, I think last time we spoke, because you were born to a Greek father and a North Macedonian mother, and heritage was quite important to you. And I think last time we spoke, you were planning on returning to Greece and potentially even playing a bit of cricket there. Can you just speak a little bit to that heritage whether you do have any interest in, I guess, growing the game in Greece or anything like that?
I guess for me, I just want to, at this stage, I just want to like chase the opportunities that are coming up. And you know, European cricket seems to be growing so quickly, and it's definitely something I'd like to be involved with if the opportunity came up. Growing the game in Greece, there have been so many cricketers with Greek heritage, like Arthur Stoinis, who's playing right now. I think Ari Karvalis, who's with Sussex, these things coming through as well. So yeah, it'd be great. It'd be lovely there to bind together at some stage and represent Greece, but you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I guess as well, I've seen you do things on YouTube, like you've done like an after dinner speech, for example, talking about it, you know, inclusive environments and your career and your Greek heritage. I guess that's just another really cool experience and a platform that you've been given as somebody who plays professional cricket. Like, it's not actually just about the moments where you're stepping out in front of thousands of people. It's kind of this platform as well that you've been able to be given to then speak about things that you care about. So that's another really cool benefit that comes with it.
Yeah, it is, for sure. It's you know, that opportunity, I think the one you're talking about is that New South Wales government. And the reality is, like, cricket has opened up a number of opportunities that otherwise wouldn't have presented themselves to me. And yeah, I've been really fortunate to have done that. It's a number of different things over the past couple of years. And I guess keeping things or doing things sort of in line with our values is, with my values at least, is important to me. And I guess I want to be as authentic as possible. And I hope it comes across in that way. I guess everyone, you know, wants to leave things in a better place than what they found them. And yeah, maybe that's sort of my way of doing that. know, doing the speaking gigs and whatever, but I'm still very conscious that I'm still trying to forge my way through, and I'm still very young and naive anyways. Well, I'm still trying to sort of figure things out. So, yeah, I don't know. It's nice to be able to speak about some of the things I care about and continue developing my I guess stance and thoughts on things like that too.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's a lot to learn from your journey. So, I mean, you're still, as you say, very young, but even in your young career so far, there's so much to learn from it. All the topics we've discussed, resilience, perseverance, adaptability to change, all these things people will hopefully learn from. So yeah, you're absolutely right to take those opportunities. I suppose away from cricket, you've obviously got that other experience in work and in the professional world, and you're continuing with your exams. Is that something that is in the back of your mind that you might want to return to in the future, or is it fully focused on cricket at the moment, and you'll cross that bridge when you come to it?
Yeah, for now I'm looking to the cricket, but yeah, I'm definitely conscious that cricket is there's a time on it, and yeah, when I'm done with that, I've got a many years of work ahead of me. And yeah, I've got plenty of ambitions away from the games. I guess the CFA, once you finish that sort of leads into a career sort of in investment banking and that sort of thing. And I'd love to get involved I think what would be really cool is you see private equity buying IPL teams and all that sort of stuff. I'd love to get involved in some of those transactions and running some of those businesses. I think the sports market and sort of the sports tech and all that sort of stuff is really exciting, and I'd love to position myself in some sort of way where I can get involved in that space post cricket career. But I don't know, we'll see how things go, and I guess for now it's just trying to nail down a playing career and continue studying on the side, and I'll hopefully get those opportunities post cricket.
Awesome. I think that covers everything apart from we like to finish all of our podcasts on the same note and ask each of our guests the same question. So yeah, this podcast attempts to reveal secrets to success and the lessons learned from athletes' lives inside and outside of sport. So we're asking each of our guests to give the game away by revealing their single greatest learning, reflection, or piece of advice from their journeys inside and outside of sport. So Peter, how would you give the game away?
We spoke about perseverance today. Spoke about adaptability, mentioned as well. I think for me, probably the biggest lesson I've probably learned is, maybe being adaptable. I guess if I hadn't been adaptable and if I'd been very rigid in my approach, probably wouldn't have been a professional cricketer today. I guess I was adaptable when I decided to listen to that particular coach's advice and totally changed my bowling style to the faster style of leg spin. So that'd be the one thing I'd leave.
Perfect. That's really interesting. Really appreciate your time, Peter. Lots to learn from your journey, and really appreciate you coming on.
Cheers, guys. Thank you. Appreciate it.